Ich will Immos, ich will Dollars, ich will fliegen wie bei Marvel, zum Frühstück Canapés und ein Wildberry-Lillet. Ich will Immos, ich will Dollars, ich will fliegen wie bei Marvel, zum Frühstück Canapés und ein Wildberry-Lillet.
I can get into that one. I can totally get into that one,
Right?
Samuel. I'm gonna look it up,
Right?
man. You have it
Right?
on your Spotify?
Yeah, I just sent it over to you, but
Okay,
it's
awesome,
I love her.
man.
Like Nina, she's Nina Chuba, she's a German rapper.
Yeah.
And I don't know, she's like 23, 24, and I usually don't listen to that much German rap. I'm more like, techno or heavy metal. I like Rammstein, for example, but like she has very catchy texts. She's very down to the earth. I love her social media account. She's so like she'll post like videos from her apartment and like she's just very
She's a
chill,
regular person. She's just a regular
regular
person with
person,
talent.
and
Yeah.
she's from Berlin, so yeah,
Okay.
very very down to the earth. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much for opening up the show that way. And we'll definitely check her out. It's always interesting. And I'm excited. I want to do this show so bad. I know we spoke, when was it, a couple of weeks back? And then
Yeah.
congratulations on the new addition to the family, which is amazing. So we were
Yeah,
scheduled, but then
I
all of a
think that I
sudden,
was like,
yeah.
yeah, we're literally in the hospital, and I was like, oh no, shit, I've got like my pod recording with Manny tomorrow. I've got to cancel
The
that. And
podcast
I
has
cancel
nothing
and
to
I.
do. That gets canceled right away. Don't worry about that. And everything's
Yeah,
all
and then
good,
I
right?
think you emailed back, like, why did you cancel? What's happening? And I
Yeah.
think I was just, I was in the hospital kind of being, oh, my wife's in pain. Everything's happening. I was like, child coming, can't talk right now.
So this is amazing. So I'm glad that you're on, and I want to let everybody know that basically we're going to talk about what I truly love what you guys are doing, and how long you guys been doing it now? Like, how many years has Journeyman been around?
Yeah, so we've been around since 2017 pretty much, but we've had to take kind of a forced break during COVID. All the
Yep.
borders were closed. So kind of,
Yeah.
I'm going to go into
Yeah,
a
we'll
bit
talk
more
about
about what
it.
we do,
Yeah. But
later on,
basically
but COVID.
you're facilitating tradespeople moving around the earth. That's what you're doing. You're giving opportunities for tradespeople from your side of the earth and then from our side and vice versa. And you guys are expanding. And I want to see you guys grow so much to the point where it's literally almost in every country. I would love to see if it's in every, like, that would be
Right.
amazing. Wouldn't
I
that
mean,
be
yeah,
amazing?
we're yeah, say again.
Wouldn't that be amazing to have that
Amazing.
you guys can basically get it? And because I would do a tour or something like that. I would love to just kind of bump into journeyman people that are in different countries and then they're working in construction.
Yeah. So we're basically building bridges, right? We're
Yes.
enabling young German tradespeople, Austria and Switzerland as well, to go abroad to Canada, the US, New Zealand, and Australia, and worked there for a bit. But of course, I mean, you can do it with every country to every country. We actually have, and I mean, you're a content creator, right? I mean,
Yeah.
we actually have an Instagram influencer who's been doing a couple of collaborations with us, and he's thinking of actually going to Canada and then visiting some of the partner companies we work together with and kind of interviewing the German tradespeople that work with them, etc. I think perhaps you actually should meet up if he does it.
For
We're
sure.
kind of in negotiation at the moment. Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll figure it out. But then also, it doesn't dismiss me from coming to you guys. Like, as much, I
Absolutely.
mean,
Yeah.
as much as I love talking to people on Zoom, I rather talk to them in person. So,
Yeah.
I mean, we've had a carpenter from Belgium come to Canada, and she was on the show. And I've spoken to people in Hong Kong. I've spoken to people in Greece, in Italy, all kinds of stuff. So, I love that connection kind of thing, because construction, I think, is global. It doesn't matter if you
Absolutely.
take a German and pop them into Canada, they will understand what's going on the site. And I was recently in Turkey and I was coming across some job sites and we were speaking construction. It was just so simple. I saw what was happening and then all of a sudden I started talking to people and we were just discussing the details of what was happening, and we
Yeah.
were able to communicate because it was construction. Simple as
It's
that.
a universal language, right?
I love it. So let me share the deets. Let me get some stuff out of the way. Samuel Schneider is here from Journeyman, and you can find them on their website, www.journeyman.io. And then also they have another website, which is www.journeymanstaff.com, which is more the English one. But check out both, everybody. And then you can reach him on his email under samuel@journeyman.io. And then on Instagram, you find them under journeyman.io. And then also there's the English one too on IG, right? Is it under the
Yeah,
staff?
it's journeyman underscore stuff.
Staff. Okay. And then let me do a
Yeah, so
quick,
it's really the same thing. Yeah.
let me do a quick shout out. I'm not a fan of polo shirts, man. So it's like you hardly ever see me in a polo shirt, but I guy gave me this polo shirt. So I throw on the polo shirt, but guys, don't send me any more polo shirts. I really don't like polo shirts, man. I'm not a polo shirt guy. It's just, that's not who I am. So I guy, I'm wearing, thank you. Great product. They scan everything, which is amazing. I love it. It's wonderful. And it was fun to have them into the studio. But let's get started with you now, Samuel. So how many
Yeah.
people started this and why did you start this? Obviously, you were something had to happen for you guys to go, wait a minute, something had to happen, right?
Yeah, so back in 2017, I basically started this as a one-man show. And I think a couple of things triggered this. So I'm actually not from construction originally. I mean, I think the most experience I ever got was when I was like 16. I worked for a summer in my uncle's stone mine. And I'll get back to that when I get to my least favorite tools. But basically, I had to kind of drill sandstone out of like huge sandstone blocks, like 2 meters by 1 meter by 1 meter out of kind of the stone mine. That was my job. And I was
that would leave an impression. For sure, that would leave an impression.
Exactly. Yeah. So sorry, I have to go back in the history a bit. So that's basically my construction kind of construction experience, right? And then when I was in the Swiss military, it's kind of mandatory service in Switzerland. So I was an officer or a non-commissioned officer in the Swiss military. Kind of all different social levels get mixed, right? So you're like people that did high school and go to university, people that went to the trades, people that are whatever, farmers, everybody gets mixed together and you have to sleep in the same room, like 20 people sleep in the same room for the first, whatever, 20 weeks of basic boot camp, right?
Okay.
So, and I had a lot of friends from construction from back in that day. So although I did not work in construction myself, like kind of, I got to know the mentality a bit. And it's a big social equalizer actually in Switzerland, everybody going to the military. And then I went on to university and I had these awesome opportunities of studying like a semester abroad, right? I went to 6 months to Argentina and got to know the beautiful country over there. I was in Buenos Aires. I learned Spanish. Nice. I've been abroad in the US a couple of times. I've been abroad in France for half a year when I was in high school. And after I graduated, I was like, okay, what do I want to do? And there's this huge problem here in Germany, also in Switzerland, that not enough people go into the trades anymore, right? Not enough people.
That's not just in Germany, kind of, Samuel. That's everywhere,
It's everywhere. Right?
Yeah.
It's everywhere. So basically my first idea, and I always wanted to become a kind of a business owner, was, okay, let's build like a, let's facilitate finding great jobs, right? So let's build like an online platform only for the trades within Switzerland, Austria, and Germany.
Okay.
And then kind of when I was balancing around the idea of it, I thought, okay, that's a bit too boring. What else? What am I passionate about, right? And then I was like, oh, I love going abroad. I love traveling. I love these experiences that I had when I was abroad. Why don't I try not only kind of moving people around from job to job, but actually making the trades more attractive? Kind of why don't I enable these young tradespeople to have the same experiences that I had the honor of having, of kind of going abroad for a semester or going someplace else, experiencing that culture. And of course, I mean, it's a business, right? We earn money. But in the end, I do think that we're doing something very valuable. I mean, we're opening up the minds and souls of young men and women. They might have lived their whole life in their little Bavarian village at their parents' place. And then the first time they step into a plane, they go abroad with us, with Journeyman, and they go to whatever, Muskoka, you know, to build beautiful cottages, or they go to Queenstown in New Zealand, or they go to Auckland, work at a furniture shop, or they, we're everywhere, right?
Are they extremely nervous? Are they nervous that they're kind of jumping into a pond of so many talented and skilled people that they think that they might get lost at first? Mm. Are they like that? Mm.
So I think it really depends on characters, right? I think when we first started this, like the early movers, I think those were kind of more mature people. So we're talking about guys and girls between the ages of kind of 20 to 35, right? So it's always an age thing, but there's different characters. And that's also our job as journeymen, right? So so basically the way it works is we pre-qualify these people. We check their credentials. We see that they've gone through our very structured apprenticeship system that we have over here, that they know their shit, they know how to be a carpenter, how to be a cabinet maker, whatever. And then once they have a job, so let's say we have a partner company in Muskoka, for example, and then they accept a job offer there, we actually coach them. So they've got like 3 months of preparation with us. That's kind of getting their visa, getting their flights, etc. But we also help them with those kind of cultural differences. And I think, one very funny example is always like, we Germans are very direct. And then like if your supervisor on a Canadian construction site says, look, I would recommend doing this and that way, it means like you have to do it this and that way, or I'll rip your head off next time. Like a German would be like, oh, I mean, yeah, nice that he told me that. I'll still do it my way because I mean, like a recommendation, right? And that's the kind of things we try to tell them. But your question was about them being nervous. I think, yeah, some of them are. I think most of them overcome it. We've had cases before. I think the worst case we've ever had was a guy, he was flying via Hong Kong to New Zealand.
Okay.
And on the airport in Hong Kong, he got homesick and he was like, I'm going to go back home. Like,
okay,
like
that's a different. That, yeah, that's a different. That's a different kind of situation. When I say nervousness, I think it's like you gotta kind of get a feel for the lay of the land. So it's like, and that happens to me still. So even if I walk onto someone else's job site, I still have to get a feel for the lay of the land. Even though I understand the land, I just gotta be a little bit more respectful of whose job site this is. What? How is it all set up? Where am I in the pecking order, kind of thing? And then you know, be respectful. So I think that if you're going to a different country, it's almost tenfold at that point because now you've got to, it's the culture, it's the country and it's completely different. So now you got to do the construction thing, but the cultural thing too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges for our candidates and something that we have to educate them about as well. So I think that's our job as journeymen. That's, we're kind of that bridge. I always like part of our, we had a company offsite with my whole team a couple of months back. And actually, one of our vision statements is that we want to be bridge builders internationally between companies and construction workers.
Yeah.
And being a bridge builder doesn't only mean finding a job for somebody, but it actually means translating what does the company say and what should, you know, kind of building those cultural bridges as well. And it's something we underestimated at the beginning, but I think we're getting better and better at. So kind of ironing out those cultural mistakes. And, you know, it's, again, some young men and women have kind of an innate ability to do that from day one.
Yep.
Some need a bit more coaching. But generally speaking, I find that the people that we send abroad, and that's also why it's so much fun. I think that's probably kind of the, I think already kind of the trades in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland, they're very good. You know, we've got a very, very good education system. But then it's kind of the top 20% of the crop. Because just think about the person that's willing to uproot their lives in Germany, quit their jobs, go abroad for a year. That's kind of, that already speaks to their character in a way, I find, right?
Yeah. Are you finding it, is it easier, Germans coming from there to go to a different place or another place coming to Germany and curious about working in Germany?
So currently we're doing Germany, Austria, and Switzerland to Canada, the US, New Zealand, and Australia.
Okay.
Not the other way around yet. I think one of the main challenges there is still language. So I find that even German-speaking tradespeople, they've got like basics of English, right?
Yes.
But I would question if like a tradesperson from Canada has
specific and I language. Will answer you and tell you we don't. we might have Spanish, we might have French, we might have Portuguese and Italian. That's the extent of it. But yeah, German would be a difficult one for sure. Mm.
And I mean, like, we just haven't done it before. And we're still like, I did mention we had to take like a 2-year break. So we basically went nearly bankrupt. I restarted the company. I had a couple of investors before I bought out the company during COVID just because like borders were closed, right?
Yeah, you couldn't do anything.
For 2 years. Like my first daughter was born and it was like COVID. And I was, you know.
How was the momentum, Samuel, when you first got started? It was already going up nice. Like people were embracing this. They were really interested in this.
Yeah, I mean, by the end of 2019, we're like a team of, I would say, 14, 15
people.
And we were sending around 10 to 15 people abroad a month. And we're back up there right now with a smaller team. Also as a business owner, I mean, I was 25 back then, 26. I'm a bit older now. I think I have a bit of experience. So I think I've made the business a bit more efficient. I think also that like we've invested heavily in technology and automating with AI and other processes. So I think we're more efficient and we're at about the level that we were pre-COVID, even a bit above probably. I'm really excited and it's still a ride and I think the momentum is just picking up.
So what's the mindset? I'm trying to figure out, are the governments of the countries getting involved and are they making things easy for you guys to come in?
I mean, it's part of the reason why we chose those four countries, so the US, Canada, New Zealand, and Australia, is because they all have quite good visa schemes for kind of short-term work. So kind of a year and a half. So usually it's like work and travel schemes, stuff like that. But I have to say it's not always easy, and it's always kind of the big black box. So when we talk to our partner companies, some of them can commit up to, you know, kind of 3-4 months into the future. And then some companies are just like, look, we're too small. We can't plan 6 months ahead. So we can't work with you guys. Because in the end, especially like in the US and Canada, the visa might take anywhere from 2 weeks to 2 months, you know, and you never know if like the backlog is a lot, or the website of the Canadian government crashes, or so that's kind of part of the process we really don't have any influence on. So I think really the best partner companies to work together with are the ones that are like, hey, listen, we're a team of 20, 30 people. We want to have four of your German guys working with us all the time, learning our ways, perhaps also our German guys teaching them something, because some of our guys have like master cabinet maker, or master installer degrees, right? And they rotate through. So, right, they'd have four cabinet makers. One comes in January, one in May, one in April, one in July, one in October. And then every year they kind of rotate through four people, and that makes it easy for us to plan ahead.
So, Samuel, I don't want to piss off on the Canadian side of things here, but I'll do it because I'll say, honestly, you guys over there, and also Europe as well, too, you mentioned the master. It's 100% true. So it's when you get a specific trade, they learn that trade, but then they learn to master that trade. In Canada here, and a lot of it is very similar in the US as well, too, you have the separation. So a framer just handles framing, but over there, you guys are handling framing and also finished cabinetry and all the detail that's associated with woodworking. Over here, we have to get into specialty forums. We have to get into stereotomy if you want to start getting into that kind of thing, or you get into fabrication of cabinetry and you end up leaving the rough side of things. So is it a challenge when you guys get your journeymen coming over to us and they discover that you guys do smaller portions of each trade instead of you guys have a bigger understanding of all the trades? Am I wrong to say that?
First off, I think you guys have the Red Seal carpenters, right?
Yes.
Isn't that like a quite a good education, actually?
It's a great education. It is. Yeah. But it's also, there's a lot of gatekeeping. There's a lot of bureaucracy. There's a lot of crap associated, and you try to keep down people at times. You don't want to excel them too fast. And I respect that you need to have that time limit to learn that. It is good, but you'll hardly ever see on the Canadian side here, you'll hardly ever see a framer become a finished cabinet or a finished woodworker. You'll never see that happening, right? So you guys, on the other end, you have a tradesperson coming from your side of the pond, and they can frame a house, but they could also build furniture and they can do cabinetry. That's where I'm trying to go with that.
Yeah, but I would actually disagree a little bit.
Sure.
I think you're like, so the apprenticeships, they are actually quite specialized. So like a cabinet maker, he will do his, so basically the way apprenticeships work here, it's usually a 3 to 4 year structured program where you spend 3 days a week working in a company, 2 days a week at school. So basically once you have the certificate, it just means, look, this is a guy that showed up to work for like 4 years in a row. He can do all of these skills, and he's also passed his school grades. But basically, we've got a so we've got just in woodworking. Let's stay on the wood.
Yeah.
So we've got a cabinet making apprenticeship, we've got a finished carpentry apprenticeship, and we've got a framing carpentry apprenticeship. I do think some foundations are transferable and are kind of, you know, they know things, but I would still say that, well, let's not call him a framing carpenter, but like a general carpenter will not be as versed making cabinets. I do think the other way around, so kind of a cabinet maker has an easier time kind of upskilling to become a carpenter later on, because it's, I think going from quite rough work to very detailed work is harder than going from very detailed work to a bit rougher work on the construction side.
Yep.
But we have a saying here, kind of the carpenter, he measures in meters, the finished carpenter in centimeters, and the cabinet maker or joiner in millimeters.
Yeah.
So I would disagree a bit on that, and the specialization. I actually found it more the other way around. I sometimes feel more like Canadians or New Zealanders or Australians tend to blur the lines between the trades a bit more, but perhaps I just don't have the full understanding yet.
No, you're not wrong. I do agree with you on that. And it's kind of like, I think the segregation on our end comes from the union side of things and the ticket side of things, right? Where you, you don't want union members crossing over, so to speak. But when you get into the custom world, you see a lot of that crossover happening. But there's still the segregation where it's like particular trades will only handle this. On the side or on their personal projects, they'll dabble in getting into other parts of woodworking or carpentry, all kinds of stuff. But that's how it, I just look at the separation that way. That, and I think that over there, you guys kind of have the master specialty section, things of that. That's how
So the
yeah.
thing is that's just to go a bit into the master thing. So it's there's apprenticeship and then you're what is called a journeyman, right? And then you can you usually work for a couple of years. So it's like doing your bachelor's and then you decide, okay, let's go do an MBA. And let's so you go on to do a master's. And that doesn't only include more trade specific know-how, it also includes stuff like project management, people management. So basically they want to enable you to open your own shop going forward if you want.
Very
so
nice.
If you want to, and kind of the prerequisite in Germany to have kind of license to educate others to become journeyman is a master. So you need to be a Meister or a master cabinet maker, carpenter, whatever, to have that license to actually educate others to become journeyman. So that's kind of how it works.
I mean, here, all you need is a driver's license. That's all you need. And then you can consider yourself the dude, right?
And the truck and hand tools, right?
And the hand tools, exactly. I want to ask you, which is the most popular trade of all the people that you're dealing with that they want to get into, and which is the least popular trade?
So currently, we're seeing a huge amount of joiners, cabinet makers. So those will be people that design, draw, and then also build kind of custom-made furniture from scratch. They can usually also install. So, but that's like a huge group we have at the moment. Then also general carpenters is quite popular. And we're kind of opening up to more trades at the moment just because we're seeing different demand coming up. So like CNC machinists, we've got car mechanics in New Zealand at the moment.
Nice.
We've got what would be called like a roof plumber. So those would be kind of, roofers that work more with like metal kind of roofs or like zinc and copper kind of.
I love that stuff. I'd love to see more of it in Canada. It's just too expensive.
Yeah, but it's very popular actually in Australia. So in Australia, New Zealand, you see a lot of metal roofs. And that's kind of, or also like, I'm not sure how you call it in English, but like the rain drains that go, or like the chimneys, like
the flashing,
cover them with metal.
Talking about the flashing. Yeah. So you guys do a lot of intricate, and there's a few people that I follow on social media that do they do amazing. I consider it art. I don't consider it, any kind of trade. The whole lead, galvanized metal, shaping, all that stuff, like copper and everything. Like that's, I'm fascinated by that stuff. And then you get into the world of thatching as well too, right? That's a whole other art as well too. So I'm just curious, which is the least interested trade coming from you guys?
Like, from our guys, I would say kind of, concreting. Like we're just, we're just kind of getting started on that. But it is kind of... we've got a specialty trade here that's called concrete worker. And I think it's just kind of probably looked down upon a little bit because it's not as, you're not as mathematic. You're like a carpenter here or like a Finnish carpenter. He learns a lot of mathematics as well. He learns about structural stuff. And with the concreters, it's just like, again, it's just a perception that some people might have. So I wonder if that's one of the reasons why these people are also not as interested in going abroad, but we're just getting started in that trade. So also a lot of carpenters can do concreting over here. So let's see.
So you're talking about concrete pouring and concrete foundations.
Yeah, concrete pouring.
Okay.
Foundations.
But not finished concrete, not finished dress concrete, right?
No.
Yeah.
Also kind of, also in high rises when you, again, like when you lay these, you have these metal constructs and then you pour the concrete into them, right?
Yeah. All the piles and everything like that. So it's basically, you're in the concrete trade Samuel, it's the same thing here. It's not as glamour. Okay. But the moment that you start telling them what the numbers are regarding wage, it becomes very glamorous.
That's why I'm thinking it's a lot of commercials. So I think, and that's a question I wanted to ask. So we're working with a lot of residential companies, non-unionized residential builders and kind of, custom made furniture makers, high end, a lot of high end. So which companies, so I've always had like, we've talked to a couple of more commercial companies. They're always like, oh, it'll be a problem because we're unionized and you guys are not, your guys are not in the union. I mean, is one able to speak to these unions, be like, hey, can our guy get a, like a 1 year membership while he's over there? That would be awesome.
You can have a conversation with them. They're very strict. They're more than willing to speak to you. And I think the objective there is that they'll be entertaining the idea as long as it maybe paves a way for them to get into the union side of things instead of the custom resi where it's non-union. But there is a line drawn in the sand. That's the thing about it. And I'm not dismissing the unions. I'm not saying they're bad or good. I'm just saying that there's two different worlds here. And unfortunately, the only thing I've ever said about unions on this show, I've said it several times, is that in today's construction climate with the unions, they're designed to protect the weak. That's bottom line. They are a good idea, but I wish that they would stay true to their core values. So they'll entertain you for sure. They'll have a conversation with you. They'll talk about it. And I think that it would be valuable for them to speak to your journeymen to come to these projects for sure.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, see, I always learn new things. And it's also kind of one of our challenges because we're building these partnerships here from Switzerland and Germany, right, over there. So I should be traveling a lot more. But
Samuel, I think you'd be better off to get into the custom world. I think the custom world, what I've been seeing in the last 6.5 years of doing this show and me being in construction for 15 years, I've seen a lot of small companies, like 1-2 person shops, grow really nicely to 20 plus person shops. And they've designed...
And that's like our sweet spot, right?
Yeah, they basically have seen the value to have that kind of 20 plus individual crew. And then they can grow really nicely. It's not like comfortably, they grow really well where they need all these people. These people are not standing around. And the priority behind a lot of these companies is the education behind needing these people. It's not just about filling bodies on a job site. It's literally about finding bodies that want to absorb the knowledge that's being placed in front of them.
Yeah.
That's what
and
I'm seeing.
And one of I just love hearing the stories of our partner companies. So we work with a company in Squamish, British Columbia.
Yep.
They're called Leon Levinista. They do beautiful custom made furniture. And I just talked to their production manager a couple of days ago, and I think they have about 4 of our cabinet makers on the floor at all times. There are also about like 20-25 people in there. They were smaller. They're bigger now. And he was like, look, one of the effects that your guys had on us was like, whenever we'd have a new local applicant, like a local cabinet maker joiner thinking of joining them, he'd walk on our shop floor and there'll be these 4 or 5 German guys like working in a very strict way, like super knowledgeable, super kind of, super detailed. And they'll be like, oh, this is a place I want to work at.
Yeah.
And it's actually had a positive impact on them hiring local people. So it wasn't just about us bringing over bodies, like kind of the culture that these German guys then brought along, kind of, punctuality, detail-orientedness, kind of the skill that they brought along had a ripple effect on the rest of the team.
And I love that you bring that up. And one thing I will say is that like after this show is all done and we talk some more, I'm going to connect you with a lot of people that I think that you should probably get connected with because I'm seeing their companies grow and there's value there. And one right off the top of my head is Chris McCaskill out of London, Ontario, and he's grown really well and he's got such an amazing shop. And we've had some of his students in here and his employees in here. And I love what he's doing and I'm going to connect you with him and others as well too. But I also want to have the argument about, we should be hiring local instead of bringing in abroad. And I'm like, I will challenge you to death on that because the value someone from abroad that brings into a local environment and what that will have and vice versa is far more valuable than just dismissing that abroad. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think it's an age old argument, right? And I think we're hearing the same arguments in Berlin. We're hearing the same ones in Switzerland. We're hearing the same ones in Canada and everywhere. Like, oh, like locals first,
It's, yeah.
And I understand that I don't think we're taking away anybody's jobs. I do think though that enabling that exchange of know-how helps companies grow and create more jobs for more locals.
Yes.
So that's one argument I would say. And then on the other hand, there's also just not enough local people to take the jobs that are around. I mean, I do think there's a tipping point. So I would always advise every partner company we work with. So I'm always like, hey guys, don't have more than 20% of our guys as part of the crew. Because otherwise, if you have like 60% Germans, you know, the culture, the core culture of your company will change. 20%, yep. Like your 20-person team, have four of our guys, five max, you know. That's kind of the sweet spot.
I totally agree.
But don't have more than that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's enough for them to transfer knowledge, right? Them gaining knowledge from the locals and the locals gaining knowledge from you guys, right?
And the Germans absorbing Canadian culture and not so much the other way around, right? You don't want your company to change fundamentally. I think it's the same thing everywhere. I mean, we can talk about it in school. Like when I was in like fourth grade, we had the Kosovo Yugoslavia war here in Europe, and we had like I think four or five Kosovo Albanians joining my grade at that time. And it started like it was nearly at that tipping point where our teacher was kind of overwhelmed because you know four or five kids just didn't speak the language anymore, and it kind of you know it became very very challenging. And I think that argument goes everywhere. I think you know having some foreign elements is great to learn, to exchange knowledge, etc. And then there's a tipping point, which you shouldn't go beyond.
There's one thing that I want to ask you, Sam, is that I'm hoping that you guys are probably going to entertain this one day and start unfolding it. I'm fascinated by a really small percentage of young trades embracing old skills. And I'm talking about those artisans. I'm talking about the stone carvers. I'm talking about the tile artisans and like all that intricate work that unfortunately, you know, three letters are killing this. CNC, right? They're people are embracing, especially here on this side, they're embracing machinery and computerization to do that work. And I'll always look at it and I can tell if a hand or a machine made that. And that's just me from my experience, but I'm hoping that you guys are trying to find those young gems that are out there that really want to do these old skill traits, these artisan traits.
Yeah, I agree. I think we can't. It's for us as a company, it's always a bit challenging to do the very, very specialty trades. In the end, kind of our bread and butter business is carpenters, cabinet makers, starting with a couple of other trades like roofers as well. For example, we're starting with car mechanics. And then if you go into the more intricate detail, it becomes a bit more difficult to find these individuals actually. So I'm probably not too knowledgeable about the whole super specialty topic. Again, I know from my uncle's stone mine, they also had kind of a custom, gravestone?
Yeah.
Gravestone business, where they had stone masons actually
hand carving.
These.
Yeah.
You're hand carving them, which was awesome. But at the end of the day, I do think there'll always be a spot for that kind of high-end handmade section. But the big part of it will be kind of automated, right? It's the same as our office jobs start to be automated by like more repetitive things are starting to be automated by AI, et cetera. So, yeah.
Where I'm going with that is that I don't want the younger generation to not see opportunities around the world and be discouraged and then leave it, because I really think that they should stick with it because they're going to definitely excel in it. That's what I want to see. Like I don't want to see anybody lose their way because they don't have opportunity.
True.
Something to consider. No, for sure. And then another one I just thought of that I got to connect you with is Caledon Timber Framers. So they take Caledon Timber Framers. So I did a show with them long, long time ago, and they get a lot of their wood from out west, and they build a lot of timber frame projects here in Ontario. And they're a nice small shop, and they're doing extremely well, and it's all amazing, intricate woodworking, cutting, carpentry, and barns and structures, homes, exposed beams, and things like that. Spans, massive spans, and things.
Where are they located?
They're located in Caledon, Ontario. So it's just north of the Toronto area. Yeah. Caledon Timber Frames. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. No, coming up in my mind, and I just keep on thinking about all the people that I've spoken to.
I've all these plans. I mean, we've been thinking, and again, it's probably also a limitation of our size, right? At the moment, we're a team of 10 people. I don't want to take up any external investment because I want to grow organically. I want to grow sustainably. Because I think what we've built is too valuable to just kind of grow and explode and then go bankrupt. I've been thinking of doing programs in other parts of the world. We've been looking at South Africa, for example, again, kind of certain limitations with the visas, et cetera. So it's always, it's not as easy everywhere. Or then like Spain or Spanish speaking countries like South America, again, there the language might be a problem. But yeah, I think especially next year, I want to think a bit more about potential other countries where we could go, or like other countries that we could bring into Germany. And perhaps especially like in the high end. So I see our sweet spot really in the kind of mid to high end smaller sector, where kind of project leaders might actually speak English, or they might
Yes.
be able to communicate a bit better.
I'm curious, you let me know, and I think I know the answer to this. Is your government speaking the same hot topic buttons? Like there's a labor shortage in construction. There's not enough affordable housing. We need to get more people working in construction. So we're going to create all these programs. And are they working? Are your programs working to attract more people into construction?
I think it's probably the same thing around the world.
They're not
I
working
think
here. That's all I'm going to say.
I think generally speaking, I think apprenticeship programs have been gaining a bit more traction in the last couple
Yes.
of years, just because people are seeing that a bachelor's degree is not a golden ticket anymore. And a lot of people just do certain bachelor programs, I'm not going to name them, that don't really pay, there's no jobs for them,
Yeah.
right? Like, you don't just don't need it. They're overeducated, but don't really have any practical skills. So I think, and there's some influencers we're working together with, like on Instagram and TikTok, that do great work, that have like hundreds of thousands of followers, where they really try to do their part in making these trades more attractive. But yeah, there's still a labor shortage. And I think we're kind of outside of that bubble a little bit, because in the end, the product that we offer, we're not selling a job. We're
No.
selling an experience to see, or the opportunity to go see the world and see a different. So people are quitting their jobs to be able to take part in our program, and then go abroad. And I also don't see us as taking away that labor from the German market or Swiss market. We are doing it for a year or so, but these people always come back, or like, let's say 90% of them do. We've got some people getting married and having kids. So that happens.
Of course that happens, yeah, and it should
Exactly.
happen, yeah.
It should happen, absolutely. But when they come back, like, they're a different person, right? They've got that kind of self, how do you say, they've got more confidence. They
Yes.
speak English.
Yes.
They, yeah, like some of them go on to found their own construction companies. They go on to become project managers, estimators, etc. So it's really like, I feel like it's the same as doing an exchange semester as a university student. This is kind of becoming a rite of passage for those kind of very ambitious tradespeople here.
So any businesses that, I mean, our majority of our audience is in Canada, and then our second audience is in the US. But if anybody that's listening and they're interested in possibly having somebody that you're working with come to them in their business, they can definitely reach out
Absolutely.
through the contacts that we're sharing, right? And then they
Yeah,
can start the
absolutely.
conversation with you about that, and they can let you guys know what kind of business they are, what they're looking for, and then you can see if there's a fit at that point.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, look, the main things that we're always looking for when looking at new partner companies is, A, what's the culture of that company? So what we really like is kind of these 20 to max 100 employee owner-led companies that have kind of a good family spirit, that are able to take these young men and women and also show them. I'm not talking about kind of a party life, but like show them their region, their part of the world, and show kind of really take them into the company. And the second thing, it's also a little bit location, right? Because in the end, there's like more favorable locations around the world and less favorable locations around the world, but that's kind of an individual basis. But as long as it's kind of that 20 to 100 employee company, or even 10 employees is okay, as long as they have a good professional setup. What I do find is that kind of, one, two people, companies tend to not have the, sometimes aren't just far
They're
enough
not
yet
ready.
in the,
Yeah.
yeah, they're not yet ready in terms of their professional setup. So you probably need somebody in the office that kind of facilitates things a little bit. You need kind of good processes. So I think starting at 10 employees plus is when we really start looking at potential new partner companies.
And what's the term? It's a 1 year term.
Yeah, so usually our, let's say, Carpenter Simon, he'll go abroad for 8 to 12 months, sometimes a bit longer. I would say about 20% of people stay for a second year if the incentives are right. So we've got one quite big customer in Muskoka. They build these cottages, there's these high-end cottages.
Yep.
And I think they always have like 15 to 20 of our carpenters there, and they're seeing around 20 to 25% of people staying for a second year. And then we usually just replace them with new people coming in.
Now, is there an option on the table that eventually, if they do, like you mentioned about meeting somebody and having a family and starting a new life here, that's always an option there. So if you love it so much
Absolutely.
and you do the first year and then you want to stay
Absolutely.
a second year and then you end up staying for good, that's an option.
Yeah, absolutely. Look,
Yeah.
I mean, we're a business, so we need to charge for our services of kind of finding that person, bringing them over.
Yep.
But once they're there, look, if they want to stay for a second year, if they want to stay for forever, if you sponsor them for a long-term visa, great. We're big advocates of that. And every person that stays on long-term with that company, they'll be an advocate for us internally to continue the relationship. So as I said, I think 20 to 25% stay at least 2 years or longer. But that's also kind of always dependent a bit on the partner company, right? If they push for that, so if they like, let's say again, let's take the example of Simon. So Simon planned on coming in, going abroad for 10 months. He doesn't have any follow-up plans back in Germany yet when he goes home, and like the company really likes him. After 3 to 4 months, they should start a conversation with him because otherwise
Yes.
Simon's going to start planning for when he gets back home, do further education or look for a job, etc. So I
Yeah.
think it's kind of finding that sweet spot. We also help companies, our partner companies, and advise them on these things.
Now, are you guys also considering, because I'm just trying to figure out if you can take a lot of people from, Quebec here, French speaking, and bring them to France and you guys facilitate that? Is that an option? And also you're talking about maybe Mexicans and bringing them to Spain or things like that. So then you kind of get rid of the language
That's
barrier at that
true.
point. I
Yeah,
don't know
that's
if that's
true.
an option, right?
I have to put that in my backlog.
Okay, I thought you guys might have
No, but
already talked
it's
about
really
that.
nice.
'Cause it
No,
makes
but
sense. And in all fairness though, I'll just give you a heads up. First of all, French Parisian French, they're not hugely fans of Quebec French. There's two different worlds there. But as far as I know regarding the Spanish, I think everybody kind of gets along the moment you start speaking Spanish.
Okay.
I don't think there's a lot of hatred between that. I could be wrong. Someone can question, and I've got a lot of Spanish listeners. I got a lot of French listeners. But it kind of makes sense that if you have someone from Quebec here, giving them the opportunity to go to France and work there, and you guys can actually broker that deal, that would be amazing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because we've actually been thinking as about starting French as a, what I call a sourcing country, so sending French tradespeople abroad, because their education system is very similar to Germany, Austria, and Switzerland. It's kind of, we need some kind of hook. So because I'm not qualified to evaluate these people on their skill, but if we have countries with a long-standing good education system, I can kind of take that certificate and be like, hey, look, they were evaluated. I know they're doing well. So that's why I was thinking of France next. The Nordics, so Denmark, Sweden, Norway, also great education systems, and their English is really good. But yeah, French to Quebec or the other way around is definitely something we should be looking at.
But then all the
It's
Spanish
just, there's
countries.
so many things to do. I've got
No, I
so many
know.
ideas. I even thought about opening up my own subcontracting firm in Ontario. Be like, hey, we're just going to open a company and then send German cabinet installers over there, for example. And if our partner companies don't have space, we'll just send them there and hope we get work.
It's not a bad idea. Like, to be very honest,
Yeah.
it's not a bad idea. I've got one of my best clients is German, and I always love just chatting with him. And it for whatever reason, he always brings in German analogies, right? Which I love. I totally love. He's always comparing a thing, back home, but he still loves Canada the way it is. But we had a blast building his house and putting things together, and we got along really well, and now we're good friends. So I think that would work, to be honest, Samuel.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
I mean, I was just thinking about and you're probably more knowledgeable about this than I am, but what's the easiest and least friction construction company to start? And it's probably a kind of furniture installation company, right? Because you don't need your own workshop. You don't need a huge amount of material. You work with different furniture or cabinet makers. You get their stuff and you go on site and install it.
I'd agree with you. The only thing right now is that I don't know how hard you guys are being hit, but Canada right now is being hit by the economy. And so you're getting a lot of independent furniture installers or cabinet installers. And some of the actual cabinet maker companies now are actually outsourcing their own staff member to be the installer because you're getting clients turning around and saying that, well, we can't afford that installation price. So can you just absorb that in the cost of the fabrication price? So like, I mean, right now, and then this is, I'm telling people, which is really funny. I had a conversation with somebody yesterday and he was complimenting me saying that I've got a good prediction radar. And I was like, okay, if you believe that, because a lot of things that I've said on the show have actually happened. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting. So then I just said, listen, this economy right now, still going into 2027. The way we're riding this, in Canada, the way we're riding this storm, like politically speaking, we're not changing the guard until the end of next year. And then it's going to definitely take that first year, which is the bulk of 2026, to kind of make any headway. And then that leads us into 2027. So it ain't going to be until the end of 26 to go into 27 that you're going to start seeing a shift in the economy, because this new government that's going to come in is just going to cut everything, which is going to make it challenging for clients to start wanting to do bigger projects. And I'm not dismissing that we're going to just see a complete dead space in construction. I'm just saying that you're going to see a very educated dead space in construction. You're going to see clients, which is what we're already seeing right now, they're being very understanding of where their dollars are being spent. So they're not challenging us on the price. They're just challenging us on what they want to acquire. That's all they're doing. Yeah. And those aren't the days that we're easily, I guess, in the COVID years, everybody was loving it because nobody cared about their budget. Everybody was spending money and all the material costs were really high. So I would say that it might be a challenge for you to do that. Specialty furniture is a different story. I'm always in awe of seeing interesting design, engineer, and quality. We've got a lot of amazing wood here as well, too. I've always encouraged people to start using a lot of homegrown wood here, but that's an option, I think, because you got a lot of woodworkers that are coming to this country, staying for good, and then building. They're starting small shops. They're not really going big just yet. But I think you guys, if you guys were to start, I think if you were to start a specialty GC, a general contracting company, and you focus on certain types of builds, I mean, like, listen, I go back to the Nordic. I love what all those guys are doing building wise, how they're putting stuff together. I'm also a wood guy. I love wood. So I would love to see more wood, but Canada is a market and the US is very similar. We just love dabbling in almost every material, and people will always bring new materials to the market and just for the sake of trends. And I'll always revert back to wood. I'm like, this is actually a better product if we go back to this origin source, right?
Yeah, true. And look, I think the same way about this. It's the same here, like with interest rates. I mean, they've been kind of going down a bit again, at least in Switzerland, and I think the European Union as well. But the consequences of the last couple of years will still last for a bit. And that's what I'm saying. Like, we have so many ideas, but I think in every business, and I think you could probably agree, you have to stick to your horse. I always say, like, do 80% or 70% of your core business and then do like 10-20% You can do small experiments, but you can't spend all your time there, because otherwise you just invest loads of money and you leave your core business to fail. It just takes time, and I think that's one of the realizations I really had in my mid-20s when I first started this, where like, like 3 years and I'll be a millionaire, right?
You're not the only one thinking that. No, yeah, I get
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So, I mean, one wife, two kids, and 7 years later, I think a bit, or 8 years, 9 years now.
Oh, well, God, that math adds up to a millionaire. To some people, right?
At least in cost.
Exactly. Like no, I wasn't thinking cost. I was just thinking the value of having the family. But I think you're right. I agree with that 80-20 split. I think that 20 split is an opportunity for you as a trader or as a business owner to test the market. Just to see, can I try something new and see what happens? See if I can find a client or two that might be interested in some new ideas that I have. I think that's really valuable there.
Yeah. So for example, I mean, again, I hired one guy, super smart, and I was hiring for an account management position to kind of talk to our partner companies. And I hired a really great account manager, but I had this other guy, Giovanni, he's from Italy, near Venice, actually. And super smart, young graduate. I was like, look, God, I don't have a position for you right now, but you're so smart. You'll be my like founder's associate. Like, I just want you to try out new stuff. And if by the end of the first quarter you work for me, you, like what the turnover you had in money pays for yourself, you can stay, right? And
incentive.
basically,
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. He's been with us for 2.5 months now, and he's already paid off.
Nice.
So two things we're starting. So we've been starting to talk to mining companies in Australia, which is super. It's not directly construction, but they need trades. Like they need mechanics. They need all kinds of different workers.
They need the skills. Yeah, they need the skills. Yeah.
They need, and it's all fly in, fly out, and great money. So like they go to Perth, then they fly into like the middle of nowhere in Australia for like 2 months, work their asses off. They go back, they can travel for 2 months. So it's actually awesome for like the kind of people we have, right? And the second thing is actually we started offering annual contracts to our partner company. So we're like, hey, look, you paid us by the kind of whatever carpenter you're taking. Why don't you commit to 4 carpenters a year? We're giving you X percent of discount, and you can pay us monthly. So kind of as a subscription.
Nice.
And it evens out their cash flow. And it's better for me because I have more predictable revenue, and it's better for our partners. They get a discount, and they so it's stuff like this. And I find this super interesting. Although it's quite close to core business, it's kind of, you know, it brings us along.
I think in general, the construction industry is going to love what you're doing because of the connections that you guys are doing. It's really simple. Mm. It's not that we're saying that we can't find the talent pool here in our own backyard. It's the talent pool is coming from someplace else, but they're also bringing, I like the cultural connection. That's what I like about it.
Absolutely.
I would, in a heartbeat, if I had the money and the time, I would jump on a plane and go to every single country and start speaking to different construction companies. And the amount of knowledge that I would retain after that 1 year of traveling would be insane.
Insane. It reminds me a bit of, and in the end, we're a modern interpretation of what is called Die Walz in Germany. So back in the Middle Ages, I don't know if you know these images of these German carpenters with their like uniforms, they're like medieval uniforms, right? So actually, like my idea of journeyman is a bit inspired by that, because that's like the more hardcore version of what we do. Because in the end, like after their apprenticeship, they would go travel around for 3 years. And then there's very strict rules, because so you're like in a medieval society then, and it's very strict rules. So you can't pay for transportation. You always have to hitchhike or take like a freight ship from like Europe to North America. You can't pay for accommodation. So you always have, it's always like, and you can't take any money for your work. So it's always like you pay with your work.
It's the original definition of journeyman. The original,
exactly.
The journey that you travel and the experience that you retain. That's what it's all about.
And you're not allowed to come close to your home village or within 20 kilometers of it during 3 years. And like usually the first year is within Germany or Switzerland, second year is within Europe, and third year is global.
You know what? I will say that it reminds me of the iron workers back in the, I guess, the turn of the century, 1900s, when they were building a lot of the Chicago, New York structures. The skills, the iron workers were dressed differently. They were dressed more proudly, I think. And when I first got into construction 15 years ago, there was a lot of like not care in your appearance. And it was such I found disrespect to the industry and to the craft. But nowadays, I would say that it's completely changed. I think people are putting the uniform back on. They're actually spending the time and effort to look a certain way. And modern day workwear is completely different. But I connect it to those older days. I can see it being part of that messaging is coming from that. So I'm glad that I'm seeing the majority of skilled trades that have pride in what they do want to look the part. It's very important for them to look the part.
And I think it all comes down to very essential things like the way you behave, the way you act. It's not words that count. It's the way you act that counts.
Body
that
language.
Comes down to how are you, like, what's your posture like? Like, how do you dress? Like, do you show pride in what you do? Like, I get up, I shave. I want to look the part for my employees, like in a very simplified way, not like in a way of putting on a uniform. But yeah, I think it's absolutely right. I think the way you dress, the way you compose yourself, is absolutely a kind of it shows how proud you are of
what you do. 100% it does. That's what I like seeing it. So the younger generation is definitely embracing that, which is a great thing to see. And I'm hoping that it's going to continue that way even better. We might even get to the point where we'll start getting to, you know, very properly dressed individuals that take pride in their work. I mean, if you're a good skills tradesperson, there really shouldn't be much dirt on you. Like, you know, there's certain jobs, of course, you're going to get dirty. But the thing is, you should also
you clean it up at the end
exactly,
of the day.
Exactly. Right. And anyone smart enough, like, I mean, I was on a job site recently and the guys were digging, excavating, and obviously they were getting dirty. But as soon as the day was done, I was just showing up towards the day being ended. All of a sudden they had a change in clothes. So they knew they're leaving the job site. They got dirty. They have a change of clothes. It's folded. It's in the back seat. They changed. And all of a sudden now they've got a new, you know, they look cleaner now. They just finished digging a hole. Which is amazing. So that's where, and they're 18 years old, which is insane, right? So it's like, I love seeing
that at an early age. And I think that, like, for me, that was military. And I still do see kind of, you know, you can think of the military whatever you want.
It's very disciplined and it's very honest to be that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I think, especially for young men when they're like 18, 19, 20, I think it's okay to live in a, for a while at least, in a very, very structured and planned way. Just to show you a bit how it's done.
For sure. Let me ask you about women. Have you guys been getting a lot of success with women trades wanting to join you guys?
Yeah, so I think we probably have about, I would say 10 to 15%. I'd have to look up the exact numbers. So 1 out of 10, 1 out of 5 people that we send abroad is female.
Okay.
Of course, like just by the nature of it, we've got loads more men going abroad, but I think like the percentage of our people going abroad has more women than the general trades do.
You're 3 times ours. We only have a 3 to 4% workforce that's female.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. America's an 11% workforce that's female.
Okay.
Right. So you guys are on par with America, but Canada, you guys are 3 times larger.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I'm impressed. I'm impressed that you have 10% females that are being journeymen.
Yeah. So, well, not journeymen. I'm talking about people that go abroad with us. But I think generally, again, 10% or something. And then in our program specifically, probably about 15%. So a bit higher than.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good to see. Yeah. Very much.
Interesting. But I mean, it's still so much connotation with that those are male trades, right? I think the trade where we see most females in is joinery, cabinet making, and painting.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see a lot of the cabinetry, but also, you know what? We've got a healthy group of females in carpentry and framing here. We do. And I'm still, and I always will be a huge fan of a bricklayer, Julia Rowe. Julia, she's the brick chick. That's her IG handle.
The brick chick.
Yeah. Nice. And she is so skillful. It's absolutely insane. Yeah. And she's teaching now. And you know, I was just talking to her the other day, and she's an educator, and she's sharing her knowledge, and she's a very good teacher because she's a very good mason.
Nice. Yeah, we've also got a couple of very prominent construction influencers that are female. So Dachdeckerin Chiara, for example, she's got like 150,000 followers on Instagram. But yeah, I think those are really role models for young girls that want to go into the trades.
For sure.
Absolutely.
So where's the future?
That's what it's about.
Where's the future, Sammy? Where's like, so you guys are just, so there's no investors anymore because COVID kind of took them out of the play. And now you guys are focusing on yourselves right now, right?
It's just my company, my team. Look, in the end, of course, it's a business. I want to grow. I want to be successful. But in the end, it's what I do every day. I really like it. I really love the stories of our tradespeople coming back. I love it when our partner companies write us emails and they're raving about the skill level that we provide. So that just keeps me going. I think that's one of the main motivators I have every day. But I'm also ambitious. You know, I think I want to grow the business. I want to have more initiatives like the ones I told you about.
Yep.
So let's see. I mean, I'm taking this day by day because in the end, we're a profitable, self-funded business. So we have to be prudent. We have to, like you said, in your current economy, we have to turn every Swiss franc or every euro, every dollar.
Yeah, you have to.
Make sure it's invested in the right way. But in the end, the future, I just want to make more. I want to build more bridges. Yeah. I want to build more bridges between the construction industry and individuals around the world, be it from German-speaking Europe to Anglo-Saxon countries. So I'm talking like Canada, US, New Zealand, Australia, or anywhere, any other countries. So let's see. And another idea I have is like, so part of our vision is we want to build bridges, but we also want to elevate the trades and help construction companies. So one idea I've been thinking about is actually creating like what I call a construction company acceleration program, where we actually target those 2 to 10 people up and coming construction companies that you were talking about and offer them like offer them a discounted rate on people from our side that would come over, but also offer to coach them a bit, because I'm talking to so many construction companies that are successful. So I think we probably, if we put our heads together in my company, but perhaps also with you or with other people, we can probably come up with a couple of good basic business fundamentals for up and coming construction companies that we could then pass along. So it's kind of one idea I've been balancing around. It's kind of, how can we further elevate that? How can we help young construction company owners be successful? And that's kind of one idea I had actually yesterday.
It's great that you bring that up, because I honestly believe that that's the one thing that is destroying the construction industry. And what I'm talking about is the next generation doesn't have a clear direction. There is such a mass of options out there that they get confused, that they need clearer direction of where to go, who to speak to, who to basically possibly work with, and where to move. Do I go right or left? I think right now in construction, when you're a kid and you're just getting started, you don't see one fork in the road. You see several forks in the road and you're just confused. You just do not. And then at that age, I think they're smart enough to realize, I don't want to make the wrong mistake. I don't want to, you know, spend years on the wrong path. And so there, and the unfortunate thing is they might revert to not getting into the industry or not staying in the industry, which is even more frustrating at that point. Yeah. So the more things that I come across, like when you first reached out and we started talking, I was like, this is adding to a clearer direction. That's what I like about it. So you have somebody.
It's like a career path, right? We're building career paths.
Yes, here, right? 100%. And that's what I think these kids need, because they have the passion and the interest for the skills, but they don't want to make the mistakes and waste time. They want to just learn the skills and be on the right path. And hopefully they get those right paths. That's where you guys are
and
coming
they need
in.
Guidance.
Yeah, 100%.
They need guidance, right? And I just think in the last couple of years, governments have not been putting enough money into professional career counseling in the trades, or like showing attractive career paths in the trades. And I think that's where, and it's in our name, right? It's the journeyman. It's the path. So it, like, I imagine us in the future taking a young individual at age 20, kind of telling him, hey, work for another year in Germany, then you go abroad as journeyman for a year, and you come back home, then we will provide you with the capital and skills to found your own construction company and know-how, you know. So and that kind of create the whole value chain from like apprenticeship to successful construction company owner with a couple of steps in between.
It's not a one-off. Yeah, it's definitely not a one-off where you just do this one thing. No, there's a whole path here. There's stage, you know, first stage, second stage, and so on. What I'm trying to consciously do now, because I think we've all learned this, and this is probably global, I try not to put the word government into any sentence that has the word construction in it. If I can do that, then construction can move forward. The moment I include government into that sentence that has construction, I think we go backwards at that point. Because the truth is, and I don't know how it is over there, but anybody in Canada here that's in government implementing policies for construction has never been in construction. They've never worked in construction, and they hardly ever speak to tradespeople. So how can you speak on an industry that you don't know anything about? It's like, I'm not going to go into your country and start trying to speak German to a bunch of people and explain to them where to go, because it doesn't make any sense. I don't know it. So that's where it becomes a challenge, because we need the help, because we desperately need the help, but they're giving us the wrong help. That's the problem, because they're just basing it on some person's data or some person's analytical data. And I don't agree with it. It's a real challenge. And I think that the younger generation gets frustrated too by it, because they're looking for opportunities and then they're being sold these opportunities, and then it's the wrong path, and then they get discouraged. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak about policymaker or anything like that. I do still think that at least like German, Swiss and Austrian governments, they're doing a good job in upholding these apprenticeships and kind of structuring the professional schools, etc. So I think they're doing an okay job with that. Same way they're doing with the universities over here, which are mostly public.
Okay.
So I think the schooling system is still at a kind of a decent level. And in the end, that's the government that does that. But I can't talk to policy or to like building codes or stuff like that. I mean, here in Berlin, like so many construction projects get delayed because they're just too slow in giving out permits, or like building codes get up dated for no apparent reason, and then everything has to be redone. So yeah, that's very frustrating.
I could easily take out the city Berlin and put in Toronto, and it's the exact same sentence.
Yeah.
That's what I love.
It's like, we need housing, and then they can't build, you know?
They can't build because they're creating their own stops. They're creating the problems in the way. So it's like, you guys, just get out of the way. Just get out of the way and let us build. Do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We have the passion and the skill.
Set the limitation left and right, but then let us move within that path, right? That's the way I like it.
No, that'll be the extent of me bashing the government on this show. There'd be plenty of other shows that I might do it.
Do you make a habit out of that?
I speak it up. I just like there's something that I recently found out of something that happened here. So our government was really happy with we're going to give you more money to streamline the process of the permit and development fees, right? So we want you to make this move faster because we need to build. Mm-hmm. Great incentive, which is wonderful, right? So here you go. Every city gets more money. The problem is that the cities started taking that money and using it to offset and balance their books, and then they ended up increasing the development fees and the permit fees. What do you think that would do? That just
totally
created... Yeah. So it didn't... It made things worse. And I'm like, just get out of the way. Just get out of the way. So that's where it becomes a challenge, and it's unfortunate. And then I see it. I see it in the kids' faces. I see them trying to find direction. And so it's challenging. There's a lot of noise out there. How else are you guys doing to promote yourselves? Like, how else are you guys? I know the influencers are there. You reached out to me. But what other things are you guys doing to kind of get some noise out there?
So in the end, our challenges were two-sided, right? We need to get – it's like the chicken and egg problem.
Yeah.
We need to get motivated young tradespeople on the platform. We also need to get partner companies. So with the tradespeople, I think what works really well is social, like these guys, social media, Google ads. We just started the influencers this year. So we just have had two collaborations going on. But I think we spend anywhere between $5,000 to $10,000 a month just on, you know, Google ads, Facebook ads. We've got our user generated content. So we ask what is called journeyman ambassadors. So some of our tradespeople that we think are awesome, we pay them we pay them a couple of $100 to send us cool pictures of their construction sites or of like activities they're doing on the weekends, and then we're reposting that on our Instagram, and then we're using that content to leverage our ads. So that's working quite well. I think it can be more professional, but I think kind of a base level, we're getting like 500 to 700 people that sign up on our platform every month.
Nice.
And then out of those, we've got about, you know, 3%, 4%, so about, you know, 10 to 15 that can then get placed. So it's not a huge percentage, but I think a lot of people just kind of want to see and hear what we've got to offer. And it does take a bit of commitment, right?
I'm assuming that, I mean, if it was me joining your program and I was given the opportunity to, you know, go there or go there from here, what have you, I would create a IG page. I would do some social page going, this is my adventure for the next 12 months. I'm assuming that a lot of the members are doing that.
Yeah, I mean, some members are doing that. Some of them are not as social media savvy as you and I are.
Yeah.
But yeah, some of them are. And these are the ones that we actually choose for our Journeyman Ambassador program, because we're like, okay, you guys are creating content anyway, let us pay you so we can use that content as well.
The other... No, go ahead.
Yeah. No, so that's on the talent side, right? It's a lot of social media, a lot of inbound. And then on the partner company side, I think it's... We've got a referral program. So we're like existing partner companies referring other companies that works. We were also just doing cold outreach. So we're really sending a lot of emails and that actually works quite well. So I think it comes down to wording. It comes down to it not being too spammy, but in the end, it's like you have to shoot at the, shoot at the target enough times, and then sometimes you hit. So
something will stick.
Again, we're doing sales from Switzerland and Germany in all these different countries with different time zones. Email is really the way for us to go. We can't just call everyone as a small team. And then we do video calls, etc. So it's marketing, it's cold outreach via email, it's referrals. I think those are the three main tactics we use to acquire new partner companies.
So the second group of people that I have a dislike for would be the brands. I think that the construction brands. The actual tool brands or construction material brands.
Do you know Hilti?
I've spoken to Hilti. Yeah, I love Hilti. Hilti's a great product, a great tool company. Yeah, yeah, they're very expensive, but they're great. Are you guys partnered with them? Are you guys working with them?
No, not yet. But I want to partner with. I like because we're like putting together like a gift box for every new talent that goes abroad. So currently, it's like a journeyman T-shirt, like a hoodie. But I'd love because Hilti is actually their headquarters is in the neighboring village to where I grew up in Switzerland, in Liechtenstein, or that's like a principality. And I know a couple of people working there, so I'd love to partner up with them. Be like, hey, can we get like Hilti branded or Hilti journeyman branded hand tool sets to give these guys, you know?
It's a great idea, but what I was getting to is that I think a lot of these brands are not seeing the value of things like what you're doing. I mean, when you look at their social media presence, it's a sales pitch. I know, president. Yeah. It's a sales pitch on their social media. And I'm like, this is such a huge mistake. You guys need to be associating yourself with creativity, skill level, and passion, and that's it. You should be focusing on these people that want to get into this industry, that want to stay in this industry, and you should be supporting them. And I see it at some level in some of the privatized kind of schools here. I see it. You see Milwaukee joining the club, and I get it. It makes a lot of sense because that specific trade is probably going to start buying those tools. But I would want to see more Bosch, more Hilti, more Festool. I would want to see them supporting these kinds of programs. And I don't know if they're having marketing meetings sitting there going, okay, well, Journeyman's around right now. Construction Life's around right now. Are they going to be around tomorrow? And then thinking, should we support that? And I'm like, well, you guys should support it because of what they're doing, you know, and leave it at that. It shouldn't be a question of, will they be around tomorrow?
Yeah, absolutely. And in the end, it doesn't matter if they're around tomorrow or not. I mean, as long as it has a positive impact in the present day, right?
Yeah. So I want them to all wake up.
Some of these tool companies, they're too much stuck in that idea of we do something once, and then it's good for the next 20 years. It's just not the world we live in anymore.
20 years, IG is going to be completely different. We don't even know what it's going to be, right? Absolutely. So it's like we have no idea what will be the leading platform at that point. And so they need to wake up. They're still on MySpace, right? That's the problem. They don't understand it, right? Yeah. Is there anything else you want to share, Samuel, before I get to the 12 questions? But I think we covered quite a bit, man.
Yeah, that was a ride, man. It's... But great. No, I think that's it. Look, I think I've been able. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity.
No problem at all. Yeah.
Here. Yeah.
I'm very a huge cool. supporter. I'm a huge fan. I'll definitely endorse it really well. And I'll connect you with a bunch of people that I know. And let's see what we can kind of do. I mean, I just want to help. I want to be a part of it. That's as simple as that. Yeah.
And I'll come back in the pod in half a year and tell you all about what we've been able to do.
I like having guests that come back on the show to see where they're going
Yeah, I listened to a couple of your pods before, and I like some of them came back. It was mainly to kind of see what they were singing because that's like part I was most nervous about. And I heard this one guy was actually playing the trumpet, and I was like, "Whoa,
yeah,
do I?"
Yeah, get that happened recently. Instrument? Yeah, I know that was Larry, which I loved. It was amazing. And then what I find is when they come back a second or third time, they're a lot more relaxed. They're not nervous, and then they're really hungry about doing something different about the music and stuff. So I'm waiting for someone to bring a whole band in here and we'll just do a show at that point. But we have fun. That's all it is. But we're also talking about construction, right? That's what's important. And we just want to, I like the kids, the younger generation finding this show and discovering that there is the number one thing that I've heard over and over, Samuel, is that every person that reaches out realizes they're not the only one that's going through this. They're not an individual. And they realize that there's so many people that are having the same problems and they all want to try to help each other out. That's as simple as that, which is the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Hang on. I got to do 12 questions. Samuel, journeyman.
Yeah, I know. I'm all prepared. I've got my notes here.
Triple W.
I do have to say, as I'm not like originally from construction, I had to kind of Google a couple of these
that's fine.
Words and phrases that's and fine. Choose a good one, but yeah.
No, that's totally fine. www.journeyman.io. You can also find them on www.journeymanstaff.com and then Samuel at journeyman.io and then on their IG page is journeyman.io. What is your favorite construction word or phrase?
So this might sound a bit cheesy, but structural integrity or load bearing wall.
Nope.
I really like that. Do I have to elaborate or do I just say?
No, you can elaborate if you like. Yeah, no, that's a good one.
It's like structural integrity, it's not just, you know, plush and nice on the outside, but actually something that's built to last. And that's what I really like about European architecture or European like medieval towns. Like they're freaking,
they're not going anywhere. I know.
They're not going anywhere.
Have you been to Canada?
I've been to, again, Toronto, the Muskoka region on company business, but not that long and like just a couple of summer. I've been into the US a bit more.
How long ago was the last time that you were here?
2022. So that's 2 years.
Yeah, you probably won't even recognize Toronto. Toronto is it's famously known for just destroying things and building new. And I can't stand it. Toronto doesn't want to keep anything. What is your least favorite tool?
So I've got to come back to the stone mine there where I worked when I was 16. Yeah. So it's a single core hand operated stone drill. So imagine it's like, so it's basically, I don't know how to say, but it's like a long, like iron stick with a single core at the end.
Yeah.
And you just drill one hole after the other for like 2 meters. And the thing just keeps getting stuck in the sandstone. And then you have to take a big hammer to it to get it back out again. I was 16 at the time. I was the only person working a stone mine because it was like a side business for their main stone operations. There was stone dust everywhere. Either it was very hot or very cold when it was raining. So that's not like, it's memories that'll keep for a lifetime, but it's not the best memories.
It's imprinted. What was the diameter of the core?
I can't remember, like this, like okay. 5 centimeters.
All right. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. No, that would be challenging. How deep was it? Like what was the depth that you were drilling?
Yeah. So it's like 1 meter down. So you really go down. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's definitely going to get stuck.
Yeah. It got stuck a lot of times and then it broke and then I had to get a new core and it was
all again, normal stuff.
A lifetime ago.
What do you miss from your childhood?
So we had this childhood neighborhood. It was like a ring street, so not a lot of traffic. And just us kids, we would play kind of robbers and police. Do you have that game as well?
Sure, we do. We play it as adults too.
Yeah. And just kind of, or generally that feeling of being like, it's like 4 p.m., you get out of school, you go out with your friends, you don't have a mobile phone, and your mom's like, you know, be back for dinner.
Yeah.
And then that freedom between like 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. of just being outside with your friends, playing robbers and police and whatnot, or like roll hockey or something like that, but nobody interfering with you, no social media, no cell phones, just the good old 90s.
Enjoying the time. We have the same thing here. What construction sound do you love?
I mean, again, not from construction, but no. Like drilling.
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 When it doesn't get stuck.
When it doesn't get stuck.
What's your favorite beverage?
Oh, I'm super conservative here. It's just very good coffee and beer. I mean, even like I stopped drinking beer with alcohol, just like non-alcoholic beer. We've got very good non-alcoholic beer here in Germany for during the week. But like on the weekends, like a good Hefeweizen or like a good IPA or like a good Helles here in a nice beer garden.
Nice.
I think nothing compares to that kind of first beer in the sun.
Summer.
Sitting in a beer garden with a couple of friends and that first slight buzz after that first beer, that's great.
Now I want one. what turns you on and off in construction?
Okay, so on, it's really, and I've been working with a lot of like super cool companies and really like that, the design aspect of things. So
yeah,
any bespoke furniture, any beautifully designed private properties, amazing architecture per se. Now, I'm more kind of the brutalist guy, so I like a lot of like this concrete and kind of more cubic things, but also a lot of more classical architecture like you have in the US or Canada is very nice. So that's really something that really turns me on about the industry. What turns me off is people that just do things sloppy and then have to do them twice. I mean, again, we've had a couple of drywalls done in our home here in Berlin. The drywall behind me, they've had to do it twice because it had a bent in it. And I was like, you're just wasting money at this.
What was the bent from? What was happening?
I don't know. They didn't. I have no idea how they, but it was just a slight bent. You could see when the sun was falling.
When the sun
like
hits
the sun was hitting it, there was like a slight shadow.
Yeah.
Like it was just like a
wow.
I don't know what they did. Yeah.
There was nothing in the wall, right? Did they? There's
no.
Okay. All right.
It's drywall.
Favorite curse word. If you don't shit. Swear, you don't swear. Oh, shit. Shit.
Yeah.
Favorite
shit is something I use on a daily basis, several times.
Everybody. Favorite vehicle, any mode of transportation?
Okay, I hope I'm not gonna get any shit for this.
No,
I
you
actually
won't.
don't even I actually don't even own a car here in Berlin. I'm gonna get one when we move back to
But
Switzerland,
any mode of
just because
transportation, so it could be anything. It could be a
so no, but
skateboard.
it's for me it's my really single speed bike. So I've got like this mate
Matt,
black
yeah.
single speed bike, and I do everything with it in Berlin. And the nice thing, what I love about it is you're faster than by car. It's a workout. Like I bike 20 minutes to work and then home, so I've got my cardio workout in, and it looks great, and I love it, and it's cheap,
Is
no
it
gas,
pad brakes, disc brakes, or is it reverse brakes?
and not reverse. You mean like no,
Yeah.
it's not like fixie,
Okay.
so it's normal. It's not disc brakes, but it's just normal pad
Pad
brakes.
brakes, yeah. So
Yeah,
it's an older bike then.
no, it's
Or they make
like
them now
five,
that
six
no.
years.
Okay, that's interesting.
They still make them. Yeah, it was without disc brakes, but I think next one I'll get with disc brakes, and I'm contemplating getting an e-bike, but let's see.
I used to be a Bianchi guy. I used to ride a lot until I got a motorcycle,
Nice.
and then I stopped riding
Yeah,
bicycles. That's the problem.
I rode motorcycles right out of mil so I had saved up a bit of money from military. I bought a motorcycle. I fell twice, and it was like, okay, if I keep motorcycling when I'm 21, I'll be dead by age of 23. So that's probably a hobby to start when I'm like 40 or 50.
Well, we have something in common. I didn't fall twice. I fell once. I stayed up
Yeah.
the second time, but I still am on bikes. I still like bikes, right? But it's challenging. Yeah,
Yeah.
you're right. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
So I think I'm not sure if I can still attempt that, but I think professional athlete was something that always tempted me. So I was quite a good swimmer back in high school, and then I kind of went the academic way. But something that's always tempted me was like professional army or police. Just from my experience in the army, I even think that if I would have been born in the US, I probably would have ended up in the army for a longer time. But it's just not as well regarded in like Switzerland or Germany as it is like in the US. I think in the US, if you do like 5 or 10 years in the army, like you've got great career perspectives afterwards, and you can go to school, etc. But it's just not something that's very popular here. Yeah.
Nice. What profession would you not like to do?
I think I know the money is good, but kind of offshore worker, so kind of fly in, fly out, like off, like these kind of drill
Yeah.
platforms out on the sea. I think there's an age to do that, probably like in your early 20s when you want to earn a lot of money. But I think once you have family and stuff like that, it's probably
Challenging.
not really what I want to do yet.
It's a mental and physical demanding and
Yeah.
occupation for
Yeah.
sure. Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
Yeah, I think two things. I think one is really that I lived a life of integrity, and kind of so one is integrity, so I try to do what I say, and kind of have the actions count. So I would like him to say, look, this is the life you lived, and I took enough time to spend with my loved ones, so friends, family, etc. I think it's also kind of a learning curve I went through in the last couple of years, but there's really nothing more important.
Nice.
And like whenever a friend of mine is here in Berlin, I make the point of taking the evening and going for a drink with them, because I think 90%, I read a statistic lately that 90% or 80% of the time you've spent with like your university friends or your friends from your childhood, you've already spent with them. So like just take those couple of hours and spend it with them.
I agree with you. Totally understand. So what we could do is because the other statistic is that after the age of 30, I think nobody sprints. So what you should do is get together with your university friends and start sprinting. So you can take
Yeah,
care of two of them at the
exactly.
same time, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Samuel, thank you very much, man. I really appreciate
No
your time and
worries.
being on the show and look forward to having you come back
Thanks for having me.
and discussing things. And then we'll make those connections and we'll get some conversation going on this side of the world. And then I wish you all the best. I wish the whole team all the best. And what you guys are doing is amazing. I love it.
Thank you so much, Manny. Have a great rest of your day, I
Yeah, I
suppose.
know we're just starting our day and you're kind of ending your day, right? What is it, 6 hour
Yeah.
difference? It's a 6 hour difference.
Seven,
Oh,
5 p.m. right now. So what is it, 11 a.m.?
okay, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, 6 hour difference. Yeah, perfect.
Awesome. Thanks so
Cool.
much, man. I really
No
appreciate
worries.
that. Okay, don't go anywhere just yet.